This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
You are diametrically opposed to genetically modified foods. You would never buy a product that's had its DNA tampered with. This reportedly bigger, better, larger, heartier food could adversely affect your health in the long term. But do you realize that your pet's DNA has been modified, and many of the diseases we see in our cats and dogs are due to these alterations? We have bred these changes into our pets. They're driven by our desire for certain characteristics in appearances and attitudes. To discuss the top genetic diseases that affect our feline and canine companions is my guest, Dr. Gerald Bell, a clinical associate professor of genetics at the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine. He also sees patients and does genetic counseling at Freshwater Veterinary Hospital in Enfield, Connecticut. We'll be right back after this short break, so stick around.
Tired of wasting money on giant bags, boxes, and jugs of litter that don't last? Switch to World's Best Cat Litter, the only litter that lets you use less and get more. World's Best Cat Litter uses the concentrated power of corn to deliver outstanding odor control and easy cleanup. It's lightweight, 99% dust-free, and pet, people, and planet-friendly. It's even flushable. Make the switch to World's Best Cat Litter and save $2. Visit www.saveonworldsbest.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Bell, thank you very much. After reading articles that you've written on this subject, I honestly have to admit, I was quite surprised to see the number of the most common diseases that you and I see in clinical practice are due to genetics and heredity.
Yes, that is correct. And it's important for us to recognize them as genetic diseases, because the predisposition to genetic disease is lifelong. And if we treat these diseases as episodes, and then they're going to come back and present again. So unless we do things to try to prevent them from occurring, they will be lifelong treatment problems.
Very good. I think before we get into this genetics, sometimes people don't have a full understanding. They hear these words and it's like, okay, what does this really mean? If you do me a favor and our listeners as to what's DNA, what are genes, what are chromosomes, real quickly.
Okay, well, I can get into a lot of the science of that, but the bottom line is that the DNA codes for all of the characteristics in our bodies. And there are many different types of disorders, aside from other physical characteristics and behavioral characteristics, that are coded for by the DNA. And so we need to understand that certain animals are going to be prone to certain types of diseases. Now, the most common genetic diseases that are shared across all dogs and all cats are mutations that occurred a long time ago, even before breeds were developed. So they're in the ancestral dogs before man started separating and selecting four different characteristics that became different breeds. And so the most frequent diseases we see in both our purebred animals as well as our mixed-bred animals and lately the designer-bred animals, where two different breeds are being crossed. Because these are ancient diseases that predated breeds, and therefore they're present in the background of every animal.
So looking, I know there's so many inheritable diseases that people have. I was doing some research and it said there's about 10,000 diseases known to be due to genetic predispositions or abnormalities, these evolutionary changes. Are they more common in humans or dogs or people? Do they know, or cats?
Well, the rare mutations, and that's where the 10,000 or whatever numbers you come up with are going to be, they can occur in just a single families or a handful of individuals. And even the rare mutations that we see in breeds of dogs that increase in frequency, so we see those in certain breeds, there's still a very minority of the breed that has those mutations. And so that's where the volume of genetic diseases that can be categorized come from. But the most common diseases that we see across all dogs and cats are what we see the most. So the most frequent genetic diseases are not those rare diseases that are on those lists, or even the rare diseases that we know are particular to a certain breed. Those tend to be very, very low in frequency, and many veterinarians can go their entire career without seeing one of those cases in their clinic.
But things that I do see a lot in looking at your list, I know you had a list of the top five diseases, genetic diseases, and dogs and cats. Why don't we just jump in right now to dogs? What are some of the most common genetic diseases? I think some of these people are not going to go, or they will go, oh my goodness, I never thought of that having a genetic predisposition. Go for it, please.
So in dogs, the number one presentation that we see as veterinarians are allergies. And in dogs, the allergies present as skin problems and dermatitis and hot spots and ear infections. Ear infection is actually the most frequent presentation of allergy that we see in dogs. And they itch, and these tend to be chronic problems. So food allergy, people think that food allergy is going to be a very common problem in dogs, and that's the first thing that they think of when they see their dog itching and think that they have allergies.
And they're always changing foods.
But the bottom line is that food allergy is much rarer in dogs than inhalant allergies. And while there are certain foods that actually help the skin and help diminish the impact of allergies, having food that they are actually allergic to is actually very low on the list for allergic disease.
Food companies are not going to like to hear that, Dr. Bell.
No, actually, the food companies like that because they do have, there are many different things that they can offer, but the bottom line is you need a dermatologist to talk to you about that, but the bottom line is allergies to the proteins and things in foods are lower on the list in that regard. The second most frequent genetic disorder we see in dogs is one that people will be more familiar with, and that's hip dysplasia, and that is an abnormal formation of the hips that causes, as time goes on, arthritis and lameness in the hind legs. And we see that in frequency the same in mixed breed dogs as we do in purebred dogs. But we put the label on purebred dogs because many of those are radiographed for hip dysplasia at a young age for breeding purposes and so forth. And then our old mixed breed dogs and our other old dogs that we see with hip arthritis later in life, and we give them pain medications and things to help them out, they have the exact same genetic disease as the purebred dogs did that were given that label by a radiograph when they were young.
Now, Dr. Bell, most people think of large breed dogs as the ones that are affected, but it's large and small, correct?
Yes, we have plenty of small statured breeds that have hip dysplasia, but oftentimes they don't have the weight, what's called the weight stress factor that causes a lot of pain. And so therefore, little dogs can have bad hips, but until they get really arthritic, they may not show those signs because they're little dogs and there isn't a lot of weight stress being put on those hips. Whereas a 40 or 60 or 80 pound dog is putting a lot of weight on those hips and therefore is going to show pain a lot quicker and a lot younger in
Got
that
it.
Regard. The next most frequent genetic disorder we see in dogs is what's called the brachiocephalic obstructive airway disorder. And this is a problem that we see in our short-snouted breeds, which happen to be, some of these happen to be our most popular breeds now. So we have bulldogs, we have French bulldogs, and we have pugs as our three most frequent patients that we see with this disorder. And the disorder is a syndrome that by breeding for a shorter and shorter face, we've altered the the chambers that they are able to breathe through their nose and causes a very constricted pathway for the air to move. And therefore, these guys, they overheat very easily. They can actually not get enough oxygen and pass out. So there's many different ways that it can present. And the narrowing starts with the nose. Some of the French bulldogs and the pugs and even the bulldogs, their noses are so tight they can't even breathe through their nose. So it doesn't even matter what kind of airway that they have behind that. It restricts their ability to breathe. And so this is a serious disorder, and one that many of the breeds are now working to try to diminish the impact by breeding for dogs with larger nostrils or for more open airways or a little bit more of a muzzle than the extreme that has been selected for recently. So that's an important one.
What I always find interesting is when clients come in and they'll have this dog that has these very narrowed nasal passages, stenotic nares, and I'll say, you know, there's really a very simple procedure, at least taking care of the nose if you don't want me to look into the rest of the problems that can go along with this syndrome of just opening up the airways. Oh, it's fine. It's running around fine. It just snores a lot. And when I can finally convince them just to open up that airway, I said, oh my goodness, this dog is running around like this happy dog. I said, yes, it can finally get air so we can breathe. And correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Bell, when we look at breed standards from, say, even 30 years ago for bulldogs, etc., they had a very different face, and it seems like we keep breeding for shorter and shorter faces.
Yeah, and that is what has developed into such a problem that we have. And the thing is, it's not the breed that the written breed standard by itself. The written breed standard does not say breed for a dog with as short a muzzle as possible, but the interpretation of the breed standard and what people are breeding for. It's we've seen this not just with this syndrome, but for some of our Mastiff and our larger breeds. They just want to breed for a bigger and bigger and bigger dog, and these dogs weren't designed and developed through evolution to carry that kind of weight and size. So they break down at an early age, and many of these large giant breeds, they pass away between 6 and 8, you know, years of age. And that's certainly not an acceptable thing. So moderation is what we're really looking for when people are doing breeding, so that we can have healthy dogs and healthy members of our families that are not going to suffer or die from these types of conditions.
And as you're saying, they can die oftentimes at quite a young age, like less than 10 years of age, with this brachycephalic syndrome. That's just so tragic.
Yeah, so in the brachycephalics, actually there was a study done, and it showed that 16% of the breed passes away due to breathing problems at an average of 8 years of age. So that's, even though it's not the majority of the breed, it's certainly not an acceptable number. And when you consider the hundreds and thousands of individual dogs of those breeds that are around, it's a lot of dogs. That makes it much more difficult. The next most frequent disorder that we see in dogs is mitral valvular disease. And that is a disorder of the heart valve where it gets very thickened and leaky, and it doesn't open and close completely anymore. And it causes a murmur, and eventually the heart backs up and fluid builds up in the lungs, and it causes heart failure. Now, this is something that we see mostly in the small statured breeds and the little breeds, the toys and the mini type breeds. But there are a couple of breeds. And so we would expect this to be normal in a dog that's 10 or 12 or 14 years of age. But there are a couple of breeds that actually have this occurring at a much, much younger age. One common breed is the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, and then another are the Norwich and the Norfolk Terriers. And they develop a heart murmur anywhere from 4 to 6 years of age for the dogs that are affected, and they can go into heart failure by 6 to 8 years of age. So it's definitely a problem that the breeders in those breeds have to select against to try to ensure that they are selecting for normal hearts without murmurs as they get older, and not for the genes that have obviously accumulated in the breed to cause this disease.
So difficult. All right. And number five,
Number five in dogs is going to be torn cruciate ligaments. And most people would say, now, wait a second, that's an injury. And it's true that that is an injury, that where they're going to tear their ACL, just like a basketball player or a football player would tear
sports
their ACL.
Injury, yeah.
But we see this in much higher frequencies in certain breeds, and specifically as well in certain dogs that have a certain anatomy, where the angles in the hind leg, as well as where the tendons attach on the hind leg and in the knee area occur. So, and we find this in studies to be highly heritable, where related dogs are coming down with torn cruciates much more frequent than others in the breed that are not related to them. So this is a genetic disease, and studies have shown it to be moderately heritable. So again, this is something that we're seeing with increased frequency and therefore needs to be selected against by breeders. Let me just go over some of the cat diseases that we see Perfect. Most frequently. So the number one genetic disease in cats that we see is inflammatory bladder disease. And that is seen very frequently, and it's cats that are, you know, they have blood in the urine, they strain the urinate, they may pee around the house in odd places, and some people think that that is behavioral, but if you look at their bladders under ultrasound, when you study their urines under the microscope, they have a specific disorder going on that they are prone to having an inflamed bladder, and as well as in many cases to form crystals that irritate the bladder. And that is a genetic disease. And if we don't treat it as a genetic disease, cats are going to keep on presenting with it. The owners are going to become very frustrated. The cats are certainly going through a lot of discomfort with it. And the veterinarians get frustrated as well if they don't think about it as a genetic disease where you have to constantly be feeding either special diets or eliminating stress because it is a stress-related disease in the cat.
So that's now, Dr. Bell, isn't that similar to what people get also, that kind of a sterile interstitial cystitis, a problem where people say, oh, I have a bladder infection and we keep treating with antibiotics, we keep treating the cats with antibiotics, going, it is not an infection.
Right. Well, this does occur in people. It's much less frequent than what we see in cats, actually. And in people, it is mostly women. It's mostly a female versus a male predisposition. And we don't know exactly why that's the case. Whereas in cats, we have an equal male to female ratio. It could be a male or a female that comes down with that.
Well, speaking of males, some people may need to take a break right now, the females, to go to the bathroom, but have them come right back after we take this short break. I'm chatting right now with Dr. Gerald Bell, Clinical Associate Professor of Genetics at the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine. We're talking about the top five genetic diseases in cats and dogs. We'll be right back after the short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
If you've ever shared your home and heart with a charmingly naughty animal who's always up to mischief, you'll fall in love with the Klepto Kitty who stars in Talk to the Paw by Melinda Metz. Talk to the Paw is a funny, heartwarming novel about a single girl, a single guy, and MacGyver, an adorable tabby cat with a not-so-adorable habit of stealing from the neighbors. Talk to the Paw is on sale now everywhere books are sold. Visit kensingtonbooks.com for more info.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite.
Dynavite is nutrition.
Pick up two bottles of LicoChops, get the third bottle free.
New improved LicoChops with omega-3, omega-6, vitamin E.
And now, six extra direct-fed microbials.
Even better for the digestive tract and immune system.
Try LicoChops. Buy two, get one free.
At Dynavite.com.
Dynovite.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Bell, okay, before the break, we started getting into cats and this idiopathic cystitis, peeing all over the house. What else will happen that has genetic predisposition for cats?
Well, the second most frequent genetic disease we see in cats is diabetes, which is sugar diabetes, where they do not produce enough insulin, and therefore the sugar levels in their body get high. They drink and they urinate much more. They get more frequent infections because of the high sugars in their body, and they actually can become very sick, where they can become what's called ketoacidotic, which is the same types of things that happen with people with diabetes. They also lose weight because they're not able to utilize sugars, which is what insulin allows the body to do, and can get very sick from that. And so that is a genetic disease. And the thing with cats that we need to understand is that the majority of cats that we see in practice, 95% of them are what are called random bred cats. So these are your alley cats, your domestic short hair, your domestic long hairs. They're not the pedigreed cats such as Persians and Burmese and Siamese and so forth. And we need to understand that the vast majority of cats, therefore, that have these most common genetic diseases are going to be our mixed breed cats, as well as some purebred cats have a little higher incidence of these diseases as well.
And Dr. Bell, most of these cats, don't they start off as being obese? Is there a relationship between this obesity and the diabetes?
There's definitely a relationship between obesity and as a trigger for diabetes, and just like as there is in people. So that is an important point as well. They're genetically predisposed to being diabetic, but by being obese, you are giving them all of the body, all of the signals that they need to become diabetic. So watching the weight on the cats is very, very important in that regard.
And it seems like oftentimes it's these larger breeds like the Norwegian forest cats that are fairly big to begin with, and people go, oh, it's supposed to be a big cat. We'll just keep feeding it more. What are some of the other diseases, Dr. Bell?
So then we come into a group of inflammatory diseases that all have similar pathologic basis, which is a big term to deal with. But we're dealing with allergies once again, which is inflammation of the skin. We're dealing with inflammatory gum disease, where the cats have really inflamed gums and their gums actually hurt for them to eat. And you look in their mouths and their gums are really red and inflamed. It's a very difficult disease to treat. And their teeth get loose and they can lose their teeth and so forth. And then the third in this group is inflammatory bowel disease, where there's inflammation in the intestines. So they can't absorb what they've digested in their food. They have diarrhea because they're not absorbing fluid from their intestines to be able to form a stool, and so these cats lose weight and they have diarrhea, and all of them have an inflammatory basis to it, and these are all inherited. We do know of their inheritance in man as well, and we do see these run in families as well as in some breeds. So those are significant problems that we see in our practice in our patients. The last two more common genetic diseases in cats are actual single gene genetic diseases. But because the breeds that have them are common breeds and popular breeds, we do see a higher incidence of them in our practice. And the first is called polycystic kidney disease. And this is mostly seen in Persians, but also seen in breeds that have been derived from Persians. So you can see it in Himalayans. You can see it in some of the other long-haired Oriental breeds. And this disease causes cysts to develop in the kidneys that eventually can cause kidney failure at a later age. And there is a genetic test for this defective gene. It's a dominant gene, so the affected cats actually only have one copy. If a kitten inherits two copies from both parents, it doesn't even form in the uterus. It dies at a young age and gets reabsorbed. So the affected cats all have just one defective gene that can cause this later on in life.
So if I were going to adopt a kitten and it is a long-haired cat and it looks like it may have an Oriental background to it, do you have it tested? Do you have the parents tested? How do I know? Because I love this kitten, but...
Right. So if you're going to purchase a Persian or even a Himalayan cat, I would recommend to ask the breeder whether both parents have been tested. It's a little cheek swab test that gets sent in and gets tested for that gene. And if they have tested and they don't have that gene, then you can be pretty well assured that the kittens are not going to develop this disease. And so that's an important thing. And that really gets to the last, area that I wanted to talk about in terms of what can the public do to try to ensure that they get a healthy dog or a healthy cat if they're going to purchase a purebred or a pedigreed cat. Before we get to that, let me just mention the last of the five top genetic diseases of cats, and that's called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which is a overgrowth of the heart muscle in the heart, and it can cause sudden death. And we see this in people, we see it in certain athletes, but we also see it in certain breeds of cats. And because we see it in Maine Coon cats and in Ragdoll cats, where the genes have been identified for this, and those are popular breeds, we do see it in practice. We do see hypertrophic cardiomyopathy in other breeds of cats, the Sphinx, for example, and we do see it in mixed breed cats as well, but the genes for all of those different types of HCM disorders have not been identified. So there are lots of different genes that can cause this disorder, both in people and in cats.
And if I remember correctly, that is the oftentimes you hear the story of the young athlete who is out there practicing and just falls over and dies, and they had no idea this was happening.
Correct, correct. So to finish up with, I wanted to mention a couple of websites that people can go to so they can find out about what particular diseases are testable in different breeds of dogs as well as in cats, so that they can be more informed consumers when they're looking to purchase a purebred dog or a pedigreed cat. So for dogs, there's a organization that has a website called the OFA Canine Health Information Center. And their URL to go to is www.ofasinfrankA.org. And if you go to their website, the first thing that it says is health-tested parents for healthier puppies. And on the screen, it says, what genetic health screens should my breed have? And it says, tests by breeds. And you can click there, and it shows the different testable disorders for each breed as determined by the parent breed club. If you move down the homepage on the OFA website, it has areas for breeders to click, for veterinarians to click, and for potential owners to click. And if you click that potential owners tab, it really educates you on how to be an informed owner when purchasing a purebred dog. And so I definitely recommend to the public that they look at that so that they can understand a little bit better of what they can do proactively to try to get a healthy pet.
Dr. Bell, is there a site for cats?
For cats, there's the International Cat Care website, or iCat Care. And so the URL is www.icatcare.org. And this doesn't have lists by each breed, but it does give information for each breed that can tell you what the most common genetic disorders are, as well as if there are tests for them. And many breeds have disorders that don't have a genetic test. I mean, there's no genetic test for allergies. There's no genetic test for inflammatory bladder disease. And so certain breeds have certain disorders that don't have tests. And if you ask the breeder about both parents, have they had any of these disorders that occur more frequently in their breed, they should be able to tell you that they have checked on those things, that they are selecting and breeding for healthy offspring. And they're what are called health-conscious breeders. So on the iCat Care site, it says advice for cat owners, and you can click health A through Z. And then on that next page, you can click cat breeds, and it will tell you about each breed and what different issues they're going on.
But Dr. Bell, what if I am somebody who says, okay, I want, as you talked about earlier, these designer breeds. I want a Labradoodle or a Schnoodle or whatever. Is that going to theoretically be a healthier pet, or am I looking to do a double whammy of having genetic predisposition for these diseases from both of those breeds being combined?
Yeah, so the most common genetic diseases that we see in dogs and cats are not going to be prevented by crossbreeding, by mixing two different breeds. If a breed has a specific gene that is breed-specific and it causes a genetic disorder that's only seen in that breed or in a small handful of breeds, it's likely you're not going to see that disorder in a crossbreed. But all of those genetic disorders, the vast majority of them, are very low frequency. So you probably would not see it anyway, but the most common diseases you're not going to prevent by crossbreeding. And certainly the disorders that have a particular anatomy that goes along with it, if you're still selecting for that particular anatomy, the genetic predisposition is still going to be there. And so if you still have a short-muzzled breed, even if it's crossbred, you're going to still have a liability for that brachycephalic disorder as well. So the bottom line is that if regardless of whether a person is doing mixed breed breeding or designer bred breeding or purebred breeding, they need to select healthy parents in order to produce healthy offspring. That's the bottom line of health conscious breeding.
So to decrease the frequency of these genetic diseases, it's a matter of knowing what you're breeding.
Exactly. And for the public to request that information from the breeder, because although it's the breeder's responsibility to do the proper selection for health, if the public is not questioning them on that, then you can have breeders that are not doing that, that are in the business of selling puppies and kittens and are not paying attention to health, and there's no pressure against them to improve what they are doing. So just as any of us would research a refrigerator or a car before we purchase it and make sure that we're buying the right one and the best one, we need to do the same type of research when purchasing what's going to be a member of our family for many, many years. And that way we can have a healthy and a happier relationship with our pets rather than spending our time at the veterinarian's office more frequently than we need to.
But Dr. Ballot, I think sometimes it's so hard. People want a particular breed. You know, they've fallen in love with a Maltese. That's what they have to have. And they go online and they find a breeder and it's AKC. And you see these pictures and they're gorgeous pups. And they happen to have the breeder is thousands of miles away from you. How do you get that information? Are most breeders transparent?
If they are, then you know that you're dealing with a reputable health-conscious breeder. If they say, well, I did the tests, but I can't find the paperwork, I question whether they actually did the testing. And that OFA, Canine Health Information Center website, you can actually look up the health testing, and the website explains how to do that. You can look up the health testing that was done on the parents, because good breeders are registering that information, because that's how they can select who they breed to and what they're breeding for or away from. And so certainly there is information that's out there to be able to improve the chances of getting a healthy dog or cat.
But what if I'm not going to a breeder and I'm going to the shelter, I'm doing rescue, and that's the pet that I want to get? How can I increase the chances that I'm going to get a genetically healthy pet?
You don't. You just hope for the best. Most of the dogs in shelters and cats don't have histories that go along with them. Some of them do. And some of them, you understand that you're adopting a pet with a problem. And I have lots of patients of mine where the clients knew that they were adopting a pet with an issue. And that might have even been the reason that the owner gave it up. And they couldn't, you know, either afford to treat it or have the time to give a diabetic cat insulin injections and those types of things. But mainly, you know, without a history and without a breeder, genetic disease is going to be a crapshoot in what you adopt.
So purebred, designer breed, random bred, we never really know what happened to mom and dad, what was going on with them sometimes. And once they're in our homes, I always suggest get pet insurance, because if some of these problems happen, well, I should ask you, with your genetic background, will insurance companies typically cover these types of issues?
Some do and some don't.
So do your homework.
Do your homework. I don't want to be the one to start talking about the insurance. You know, that's a whole nother podcast for you.
But, all right.
But the veterinary insurance company, you know, is not a regulated industry. So the different companies often make up their own rules. So you do have to do your homework.
Do your homework. Well, speaking of homework, thank you very much for giving us information that we can do our homework before we get our next pets. I've been having the pleasure of speaking to Dr. Gerald Bell, a clinical associate professor of genetics at the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine. He also sees patients and does genetic counseling at the Freshwater Veterinary Hospital in Enfield, Connecticut. Dr. Bell, thank you so much for being with us today. This really was very eye-opening for me. I learned a great deal today.
Thank you very much.
Well, this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Please tune in again next week. We'll give you more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.